So the Buddhist tradition, there's a lot of imagery of light. The biggest is, of course, enlightenment. Master Keizan talks about the record of transmitting the light, and there's also imagery of vision and clear seeing. Kensho is a imagery of seeing the true nature of the self, or sight as knowledge. And so as I was thinking about what to talk about tonight, I really had none of that going on. And so I wanted to talk a little bit tonight about darkness. The beauty of our tradition in Zen is that it really gives due credit and equal time to darkness. When I was in my impetuous youth, when I was in high school, I remember clearly this moment of I was having some argument or something with my then girlfriend who I'd been with for 4 years or something, and she said to me kind of jokingly, but not really joking, she said, "How hard it must be for you to always know everything." And I kind of tearfully, I remember my reaction of, "Oh, you have no idea." And I used to, when I first started studying Zen, I would talk about it to anyone who would hold still long enough, and I would also talk about it to people's backs as they were walking away, you know. And I, after my first sesshin, I remember I wrote this long missive detailing every single thought that I had on insight into Zen, telling people how it was, you know, to my friends who hadn't had the great experience of this and so needed to hear about my experience. I wrote Zen papers for my cognitive science classes, because I thought my cognitive science professors really needed to understand Zen. You got to see this thing, man. And I remember getting one back from my advisor who said, "I don't know what to do with this, Josh. Could you write a cognitive science paper now?" Then when I lived at Zen Mountain Monastery, we used to pretty much every Friday night, because the retreats ran from usually or Thursday night, they usually ran from Thursday to Sunday afternoon, there would be beginning instruction, and it would take place in the Zendo for the new people who had come just for that retreat, but we would all hear it over and over again. And I remember thinking, I can do that. And then gradually, as Boundless Way has kind of grown and developed, I've gotten so there was a period in Boundless Way where after each of James's Dharma talks, I would be thinking, you know, man, I could do so much better. You should really let me talk. And and it's one of those excellent cases of be careful what you wish for. And so now here I am. And in a really important way, I've got nothing. And yet there is a refuge that can be found in really truly not knowing. there's a lot of places we hear imagery of light and dark in our tradition. One is case 28 of the Mumonkan, and this is a story about Deshan and his teacher Lungtan, and Deshan was a scholar of the Diamond Sutra and would, much like me, you know, talk to all and sundry about the subtle and important points of the Dharma Sutra, of the Diamond Sutra. He would be giving the tea ladies and selling cookies by the side of the road lectures on the Diamond Sutra, and he carried around all of his notes of the Diamond Sutra on his back all the time. And eventually, one of these tea ladies said, "So the Diamond Sutra says that future mind cannot be grasped, past mind cannot be grasped, present mind cannot be grasped. So tell me, with which mind do you take this cookie?" And to his credit, Deshan kind of found himself speechless and then went seeking a teacher. And he found Lungtan and went to his hermitage, and from noon until late at night was asking him questions, really trying to get to the bottom of this whole Dharma thing. And Lungtan patiently answered each of his questions. And then he'd ask another one, and Lungtan would continue to answer, and really receiving in a great spirit of generosity. And then at some point, Lungtan says, "You know, it's gotten dark. You should probably go." And Deshan opens the door from the cabin, and he says, "Oh, it's dark outside." And Lungtan gives him a lit candle, and you know, we presume Deshan was thinking, "Oh yeah, great, excellent, that'll help a lot." And then he turns to go, and Lungtan blows out the candle. And it said that Deshan had a bit of a realization there. The song of the Precious Mirror Samadhi, one of the recitations of the Soto tradition, says, "In the darkest night, it is perfectly clear. In the light of dawn, it is hidden." And Dogen in Genjo Koan reminds us that when one side is illuminated, the other side is dark. So what is this darkness? How do we practice with this not knowing? How do we practice with not making not knowing into some special form of knowing? "Ah, I don't know." Putting that in a bottle and saying, "Here it is. I don't know. Ha ha." The thing is that we don't get to have a permanent piece of solid ground that we can always rest on. No piece of certainty survives this path. Sometimes this is called stepping off a 100-foot pole or stepping off the cliff of the known. And so how can we live a life that honors our not knowing, that honors the dark as much as the light? The Sandokai, the identity of relative and absolute, says in one translation, "In the light there is darkness, but don't take it as darkness. In the dark there is light, but don't see it as light. Another translation says, within darkness there is light, but do not try to understand them. Within darkness there is light, but do not look for that light. Within light there is darkness, but do not try to understand that darkness. When darkness is what is appearing for us, there is light. But all we get is darkness. In the in the koan tradition, as we use it in our school, we have many koans in checking questions immediately following mu, inviting clarification, seeing as you start to see mu, to see it in a broader context, in more in less and less limited ways, from this angle, from the other angle. But we are eventually challenged to see the limits of our knowing. And in a really important way, this Zen path and Zen practice and Zazen itself is not about what you personally may know or not know, see or not see, experience or not experience. It's not about the mere content of your consciousness. And we so much want, though, we so much prefer knowing to not knowing. We so much prefer light to dark. And in fact, we imagine that enlightenment is going to be some big universal, universe-filling light that will forever and permanently dispel all darkness, dispel all not knowing. In an important way, enlightenment is equally well thought of as a universe filling darkness. And to be able to be comfortable in our discomfort with darkness, to be able to explore not knowing, to be able to explore not just the depth and scope of our own consciousness, but also its limitations. And to make peace with the impermanence that is one of the Dharma seals marking all experience, including experiences of great insight. Those will pass. And then when they pass, we feel bereft. Oh, I saw it so clearly on the fifth day of retreat. Oh, I remember. When that happens, that's us turning away from the dark that is completely visible right in front of us, chasing after our memory of light. Wendell Berry, a poet and Buddhist spirit, although I do not believe he is Buddhist in practice, has a great little verse. He says, to go in the dark with the light is to know the light. To know the dark, go dark. Go without sight and find that the dark too blooms and sings and is traveled by dark feet and dark wings. Part of the gift of Zen practice is the opportunity to explore and befriend this darkness. Not to control it, not to cure it or fix it or bottle it up. And the only way we can do that is through going beyond the limits of knowing, going beyond the limits of certainty, beyond the limits of what is or is not clear. I really love this first line, to go in the dark with a light is to know the light. So you take a flashlight and try to explore a dark room, you'll never find it. Wherever you shine it, that's not it. Oh, there's some darkness over there. And to make peace with our kind of instinctual reactivity against the dark. Is part of what this practice can include. And that is a very resilient practice. The practice that you can do that isn't dependent on light or dark. The practice that allows both as they are. That isn't receiving, that is receiving darkness just as darkness. Receiving this moment of confusion in clarity. John Tarrant in one of his books, which is either called The Darkness Inside the Light or The Light Inside the Darkness, says, darkness is our foundation, the mysterious source of incapacitation and blessing. We return to it again and again whenever growth is needed. In blindness, we surrender and rest in the empty, fathomless world, the nothing that holds us up. Darkness is our foundation, the mysterious source of incapacitation and blessing. We return to it again and again whenever growth is needed. In blindness, we surrender and rest in the empty, fathomless world, the nothing that holds us up. I like that the darkness is the source of our incapacitation and blessing. And that this incapacitation, this very limit of what we can do, is itself the blessing of darkness. And that regardless of what we think we know, what insights we think we've attained, it's always this darkness that holds us up, that supports us, So my words of encouragement to you tonight are to enjoy the darkness. And really appreciate when what arises for you is not understanding, not knowing, not being certain. Appreciate the flavor and texture of those full absences. And may you too travel with dark feet and dark wings. Thank you, everyone. So I would like to leave space for reactions or questions or anything that you may generously want to share with all of us.
Yeah, two things sort of overwhelm me in my talking about. One was a memory of when I was a child. I was in Boy Scouts, and we were camping in the sand hills of Kansas, and it was a new moon, and it was dark. We were playing tag, no flashlights or anything, and I remember every minute of it, and not as fear, but it was, I felt really more myself. And it was a time that I was like completely like not myself. I hated myself a lot. And that the light sometimes is very distracting and keeps us from experiencing anything too. And the second thing was about appreciating the darkness for like when I'm dealing with people who are depressed, I often want to fix it and I don't appreciate it. I want to hold that.
Thank you.
At the beginning of your talk, you gave us examples of how light can be made very attractive in our tradition. And then you gave us some rich examples of how darkness can also be made kind of almost romantic. And I feel like a lot of the time I'm not getting light, I'm not getting darkness, but it's something more like a sort of fuzzy TV screen with a lot of static and distortion. And, you know, it's not coming in clear, it's not going black. I'm banging it. You know, if it could clear up, it'd be great. If the damn thing just went black, it'd be okay. But I'm just getting this, you know, crappy image that I can't quite make out, and it's got a lot of noise, and, you know, it's got all those little lights flashing, and I think I see something, and then it's gone again in the ether.
If only the dark were clear.
Well,
yeah, and that's the thing. So that you've really put your finger on an important piece of it. So we make this dark into something that we can really clearly see and know. Okay, this is that dark. I totally see that now. But the only actual darkness we get. Or one form of the actual darkness we get is this, geez, I'm really not sure. oh, there's some of that, there's some of that, kind of changes. Mm-hmm. And I can see this one perspective, but there's the other one. And we can't even apply our category of light and dark. We can't even see clearly enough to say, this is definitely light, this is definitely not light. And to give up, and to notice that impulse too, that impulse to sort into decisively this or decisively not this, is, and to receive those gray, snowy moments as themselves too, without even the crutch of certainty that this is definitely dark, is part of what this practice entails. And the thing is it's never comfortable. It's never, ever, ever comfortable.
Thank you.
Thank you, Al. On the one hand, and on the other hand, then we know that this discomfort that arises for us isn't the information that we thought it was. And there is a level of comfort with discomfort, which isn't the same as not having discomfort. So it isn't all discouraging. But this experience of discomfort that arises for us is a it's a flashing neon beacon saying, practice with this piece of darkness. That discomfort is a really reliable guide. And a gift. And I want to add that I don't even know that it's true, that it's never ever. It's never ever comfortable. I don't know. I think even that certainty is too much. But you've seen this. You've seen this with your own practice and in your own life, in the way that sometimes what the moment is calling for you to do is to really honor your not knowing. And that can be spacious and relieving, but not necessarily, and even as it is spacious and relieving, it isn't exactly comfortable in the way that knowing is. Thank you, everyone. Let's now illuminate the room with four great vows. The whole universe, let's illuminate, shall we?